He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday morning. It's the March 18th edition of Best Stocks Now radio show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson with 24 years of experience sitting behind the wheel. I've seen this movie before with the NASDAQ selling off again today. Am I glad I got out of the way of this kind of a freight train coming through the high-growth area of the market as interest rates continue to rise. The NASDAQ down 211 today. It's clear back to 13,312. It's had some anemic attempts at rallies, but those rallies have been met with selling. Well, that's just the opposite of what we saw before when sell-offs were met with buying. S&P down 25 today. I do have a position in SH, which is opposite the S&P, and I do have a position in PSQ, which is opposite the NASDAQ, and QID, which is double opposite the NASDAQ. The Dow, on the other hand, is up 3 points. 33,016. The small caps are getting hit again today, down 1%. They're not happy with a 10-year yield of 1.75 today. Can you believe it? Crude oil down $1.54 to 63.06. Gold down $6.80 to 17.20. Silver is flat. Here is the big number of the day, 1.75%. This has got to have Jay Powell squirming today after he tried to calm the bond market yesterday. It's not listening to him. Jawboning is not working today. The 10-year is at 1.75% today. So welcome to Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. Well, we heard Jay Powell yesterday. I did listen to his announcement, and then I did listen to his press conference, and he did everything he could do in the way of jawboning to calm down the bond market. And his worst nightmare was to wake up to, I said 1.70 yesterday. I think my last tweet or second last tweet of the day yesterday was, you know what, if we see 1.70 on this 10-year tomorrow, Jay Powell is going to really be squirming, and it's not going to be good for the high-growth area that's been depending upon very low interest rates to support very high multiples. Well, when those interest rates start to head up, can't support those very high multiples anymore, can you? I saw this coming. And I basically got out of the way. I sold almost all of my high-growth stocks back in February. This is now March the 18th, and there's been some severe damage done to that high-growth area to the tune of about 20 to 25%. 20 to 25%. Is the damage that has been done so far to the high growth area of the market. In the meantime, money continues to shift over and the value stocks are holding up just fine right now. The SPACs continue to come to the market. We've had I think the SPACs have a lot to do also with this sell-off. The speculation that went on reached a feverish pitch. Yesterday was probably the busiest day of all that I saw so far this year of SPACs coming to market. Well, the Federal Reserve did not hike interest rates. No, he didn't do it. The market is doing it. You see, when people sell bonds, here's another phenomenon, another dynamic that most people don't realize. the selling of bonds raises interest rates. So when people start to panic and they start to sell off their bond funds, which they should have been doing a long time ago, that creates a downward move in bonds because there's not a lot of liquidity in the first place for some of them, many of them. And number two, it drives the prices of those bonds lower because now they're not holding them to maturity. They're selling them just to get out. That's what the bond funds have to do in order to meet the redemptions coming in from holders, investors selling their bond funds. And that's also driving interest rates up. In my technical analysis in the newsletter that I do every week, I've been monitoring interest rates very closely, and I've been monitoring the bond market, which those two go hand in hand. And I noted that the 10-year or the AGG, which is kind of an ETF that covers an aggregate bond fund portfolio, it did the death cross quite a while ago. That's the 50-day crashing below the 200-day, and it's gone down considerably since that has happened. And on the other side of the coin, the interest rates, which I track the chart of, that's a dollar sign TNX is the symbol there, it did the golden cross quite some time ago. The golden cross is when the 50-day crosses above the 200-day. So, you know, they can talk down interest rates all they want to and try to calm the markets through Fed speak. But the market's going to do what it's going to do, and the market is obviously saying that the Fed is behind the curve because the market is taking interest rates higher and leaving Jay Powell behind, hanging on to that caboose by his bare knuckles as interest rates charge higher. I don't know. You know, he says, well, we're not going to raise interest rates till 2024. I thought he said that. We're going to keep them steady all through 2021 and 2022. Maybe, 2023, maybe. Well, he may have his hand forced here if the bond market continues to behave like it is, especially today. This has got to be a nightmare for Jay Powell. They held interest rates steady. They're going to keep up their asset purchases. They're throwing billions and billions of dollars at asset purchases. I'm sure they're mostly buying the long end of the curve, trying to keep it down. I've also been warning in my newsletter every week about the steepening yield curve. It's not a healthy. Normally, A yield curve that is steepening is a good thing. It means there's no recession in sight. But in this case, it's not a normal steepening of the yield curve. It's out of whack. And it's showing that the market is expecting inflation and higher interest rates, despite what Jay Powell has to say. Well, what then does this mean for investors? Get out of the way, continue to get out of the way of bond funds. If you're holding your bonds to maturity, it's a moot point, really, unless you need the money and got to sell the bonds between now and the maturity date. But if you're holding your bonds, for one, we're going to start seeing some better interest rates out there. I haven't seen any yet. But companies are going to have to pay more to get people to lend them money because you're in a rising interest rate environment right now. You know, people are going to demand a higher interest rate. Market conditions would warrant that. So maybe we'll see some good buys on some individual bonds. But if you own bond funds, you're at the mercy of interest rates, and bond funds continue to get slammed. And that slamming of those bond funds is creating people selling redemptions of those bond funds, selling of the bonds, driving prices lower and driving interest rates higher. So it's not good for bond funds at all. So much for that 60-40, 70-30. You're 70 years old, you should have 70% of your money in bond funds. Well, you know what? I don't agree with that. I never have. I think you got to take into account market conditions, and these are terrible market conditions for bond funds. And the second area that is getting hurt badly, the speculative area of the market, which had extremely high price to sales, price to book, price to cash flow, price to earnings, forward price to earnings, PEG ratios, you name it. That area of the market continues to have a tornado. You know, the tornadoes went through Alabama last night. Supposedly they're headed our way today around 2 o'clock. I hope I'm here tomorrow to broadcast the show. We'll see. But there's a tornado going through high growth stocks, which led the market for so much, for so long. But then they got into that speculative phase. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of Best Stocks Now. And while a lot of these tech stocks break down, you got stocks like Deere and Dow hitting new highs. We went heavily into the value arena. We saw this coming here, just watching the charts, watching the speculation, watching the multiples reach nosebleed levels. It was, I thought the handwriting was on the wall. That's what I thought. Reopening theme sees Dow notch the fastest 1,000-point advance ever. Well, I don't think it's so much the reopening thing. That has something to do with it. But I think it's the rush from growth to value that's really been behind. In fact, the Dow hit a new all-time high yesterday. The S&P 500 is at a new all-time high. Because there's a lot more value stocks in the Dow and the S&P than there are in the NASDAQ. There are some in the NASDAQ, but you got to look far and wide to find them. And I think this reopening trade, remember something very important here. The market looks ahead 18 to 24 months. The market long ago priced in some of this slow recovery in the airlines, in the hotels, in the movie theaters, in the theme parks, in the restaurants. The market is now looking ahead 18 to 24 months from now. More on that in a moment. Jobless claims, not good this week. 770,000 versus 700,000 consensus. So that is not going in the right direction yet, and it has not been for quite some time. We have a very important meeting taking place in Alaska today. Actually, I guess it's next month. Beijing will seek a meeting between President Biden and Xi Jinping next month. Well, there is a meeting today, but it's between the low-level guys. They're trying to get the high-level guys into Alaska. If today's first high-level U.S.-China talks in Alaska are productive, the meeting as envisioned by Chinese officials would be organized around Earth Day to show both leaders are focused on the fight against climate change. Though the U.S. is wary that China will try to use the issue to get Washington to back off in other areas, both sides have set low expectations for the talks in Anchorage, which today will feature Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. You know, I would just say this, that so far Biden has continued to take a hard line against China. He has not been quick to unravel the tariffs and sanctions imposed during the Trump presidency. And this week, Biden administration even expanded penalties on Chinese officials that have undermined Hong Kong's autonomy from Beijing. So we'll see where it all goes. But today is the first step towards seeing where it all goes. And, of course, China would love to have a lot of that hard line taken by Trump during his administration unwound, especially those tariffs and other hard line issues, especially regarding Hong Kong and Taiwan. We have the SPACs have raised $83 billion so far this year, already surpassing all of 2020. Wait a minute, we're not even 4 months into the year yet, and the SPACs have already raised $83.4 billion. Well, the rush to do dot-com IPOs, very reminiscent to me. I was there at that time. This rush to do SPACs, very reminiscent of that rush to do the IPOs at the end of the NASDAQ rally. And that was another reason why I didn't like the handwriting that I was seeing on the wall as far as the speculation that was taking place. SPACs have taken in $83.4 billion during 2020. During just the first 2.5 months of the year, more than the industry garnered in all of 2020. And we're talking 2021, they've taken in $83 billion. Well, I would say this. I mean, this has been a boon for a lot of the financial companies, financial investment firms that do this kind of work and help people bring SPACs public. There's something in it for a lot of people. But, you know, I would say having an app has helped me a lot because I add each one of these SPACs to the app and I look at what they do for a living or what they're planning on doing for a living. And I saw a lot of very speculative SPACs. There weren't very good quality. And, you know, that's one big reason why they do the SPACs, because the bar to entry is a lot lower than doing an IPO, which is much more costly. There's much more regulations involved. The SPACs have a lower degree of regulations, and of course, people have been buying up these SPACs like crazy. It's not going to end well, and it's not ending well. These SPACs are already selling off. Let's just take a look at the ETF SPAC, SPAK. SPAK. Oh, they've changed the symbol to SPLAT. No, I'm just kidding. SPAC is down 2.4% today. It's off about 17% from its high, and I think it's got further downside to go. Okay, now here's where I want to get back to this market looks ahead 18 to 24 months. When we saw the market rallying like crazy a year ago, in fact, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of when the market bottomed. Okay, and then S&P's gone on a run of 56% since then. And yet, we're just now starting to reopen. Well, therein lies pretty good evidence that the market is forward-looking. So you got Wells Fargo today, CEO Charlie Scharf. You know, Wells Fargo has had a terrible, terrible run. You know, opening up unauthorized accounts, they're not very good in the advice arena. That's my take, anyways, from where I sit. CEO Wells Fargo, Charlie Scharf, is really bullish on the second half of this year. He sees the U.S. economy come back strong in the second half of 2021. Well, here's my problem with that. The market has already priced that in. A year ago, it started to price it in, okay? How about 2023, Charlie? What do you see out in 2023 is really to where the market is looking right now. He says consumer demand is extremely high over the last couple of weeks. Well, the market saw this coming back a year ago. He says GDP growth could reach 6 to 6.5% for sure, says Charlie. But once again, I mean, that's all been built into the market a long time ago. Yesterday, I mentioned an ETF called Moon. When we come back, we're going to check in on Moon. You know, it took in a record amount of funds yesterday, did Moon, the ETF. More on that when we come back. This is Bill Gunderson. Tell you what's in the air, higher interest rates, which I said was coming, and we positioned ourselves. Now, I'm going to just give you a perfect example, a real-life example here. I've got a group of charts called S&P 500 Constituents. All right, these are the 500 stocks that make up the S&P 500. Now, let's look. We've got a 10-point gain rise in interest rates today. So this really exposes the things that do well and the things that don't do well in this new environment that we're in. What's not doing well today? Well, here's the worst performers in the S&P 500. And you'll see a common theme here. Seagate Technology, Xilinx Semiconductor, Cadence Design Systems, PayPal, KLA Tencor, Micron Technology, Advanced Micro Devices, Intuit, Lennar, that's right, home builders don't do well in a rising interest rate environment, Lam Research, Synopsys, Pulte Homes, another home builder, Autodesk, software company, D.R. Horton, home builder, and the list goes on. The higher the P.E. ratio, the worse off the sell-off. And anything that benefits from low interest rates, such as lenders, such as home builders, not so much lenders. I guess lenders benefit. It hurts home builders, however, because it cuts a lot of potential buyers out of the market. They can't qualify because the payments are now have risen above the area that they qualified for. Now let's just sort this 500 stock list from the best gainers to the worst gainers, okay? We've got at the top of the list, see if you notice any kind of a theme here, all right? And this is the area that we've gone in. I know it's not as sexy, I know it's not as exciting, but here's the leaders in today's market, S&P 500, Zions Bancorp, Citizens Financial Group, Bank of America, Comerica, J.P. Morgan, Lincoln National. Yes, insurance stocks do well in a rising interest rate environment. Wells Fargo. Now, these are in order. The top performers in the S&P 500 today. U.S. Bank Corp, M&T Bank, Goldman Sachs. You get the message? Companies that have a bigger spread. The banks are probably, if you were going to name one group that benefits the most from higher interest rates, Goldman Sachs and all their buddies, the bankers, J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon, etc., Brian Moynihan over at Bank of America, they are rooting on, J-Pal. Go, baby, go. And, of course, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, they are benefiting from this. The tech sector is on the dark side of the moon right now. Speaking of moon, we mentioned this ETF yesterday. It was discovered yesterday. Well, it wasn't me. I mean, it was in the news, and that's why I brought it to your attention. Moon is a fairly new ETF, and it got a lot of rave reviews yesterday because it was beating Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation ETF. And it traded huge volume yesterday. Well, I went through the holdings of the ETF Moon, and I said, these are the stocks that I would not want to own, that I would not want to own in this environment. They were leaders in the market till about the second week of February. And then as interest rates started to go up, these kind of stocks were right in the line, right on the railroad tracks. Speaking of Cathie Wood's ARK, A-R-K-K, it's down another 3.3% today. So this shows you the area of the market. This plainly points out the area of the market that gets hit the hardest in a rising interest rate environment. We just went positive for the day here at Gunderson Capital Management. We've moved in a totally different direction here recently after cashing in when we called the bottom of the market last March 23rd, a year ago, not quite a year ago, but I also said when the NASDAQ got above 14,000, I said, that's the top of the NASDAQ. Well, you know what? The high growth stocks continued on for a while. And then when they started to get into those number three technical patterns and start to roll over, that was a small craft warning, as far as I'm concerned. By the way, we have small craft warnings here today. I'm seeing the river pick up activity. We're supposed to get hit at about 2 o'clock with the same front that hit Alabama last night. So, I don't think it will be as bad here. It kind of loses its steam. Our big thing is hurricanes, you know, in the late summer and fall, but we are under tornado watch, and I do see a pretty angry river out there today. Okay, here's another story. Value stocks and ETFs are gaining a surge of momentum. Well, that's an interesting play on words, because the momentum stocks are gaining a surge of selling, right? Well, you know, I've talked until I'm blue in the face about the difference between value and growth. The value investors have been hit hard over the last several years. Value investing got people nowhere because everybody wanted the sexy stuff. And, of course, we're in a day and age of, technical breakthroughs and electrification of cars and rockets to the moon and Bitcoin miners and everything else that's going on, flying taxis. But at some point in time, they get to be overvalued. They can't support. They had no business being at the valuations that they were at. And you've seen probably the biggest, swiftest rotation that I've seen. Now, if you go back to 2000, it wasn't really a rotation. The tech stocks got so expensive that everything sold off for the most part, even the value stocks. But this time's different, because we're still in a recovering economy. We still have lower interest rates. I want to say that the interest rates back in the year 2000 were between 5 and 6%, somewhere up there. So that made a huge difference. So now you've got, instead of a major sell-off across the board in the market, you've just got a shifting from transition from the growth stocks to the value stock. So it's a good time to be a value investor. It's forward PEs, it's PEG ratios. I wouldn't be buying anything over 18 maybe forward PE, and then I would want a growth rate greater than that. So you know what? That narrows down the universe to a whole different group of stocks that led the market over the last couple of years. Here's another high flyer getting clobbered today. Lordstown Motors, RIDE, R-I-D-E. They're the ones with the Badger pickup trucks in Lordstown, Ohio. That stock getting crushed again today. They have got an accounting problem. Down 10% today, clear down to $13.59. Now, at the height of the market in February, this thing was 32, and now it's 13. And if people wrote it down from 32 to 13, I would just say they don't have any kind of a sell discipline or watching the charts whatsoever. Let's see, Canadian Solar, I got some earnings coming in. Let's see how the solar stocks are doing today. TAN, I'm going to go to TAN. That's a lousy chart, just a lousy chart. They had that big run and they got expensive, and now they're having a sell-off. One Life Healthcare, they're doing a secondary offering. That's another area of the market that I ran from a while back. Telemedicine, which had a huge run, just a huge run. It benefited wildly from the pandemic And that's another area of the market that is just getting crushed right now. The stocks that benefited from the pandemic that traded up to levels that ratios that were unbelievable, that were nosebleed high. Okay, before we go to break, let's see what else we got here. Texas Pacific Land. You know, I've watched this stock over the years. Yesterday I sent out a tweet that this is the hottest stock in the entire market. I've owned it in the past. It's a crazy little thing. What they own is a lot of land in West Texas, and they own the mineral rights, the oil rights. And when oil moves a little bit, this thing moves a lot. It's gone from 439 to 1. It's quadrupled in the last several months. I don't own it, but TPL, if you want to be an oil speculator, what do they call them? Go out there wildcatting. TPL is your cup of tea, Texas tea. This is Bill Gunderson. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of Best Stocks. Now, well, our stuff is surging today. What can I say? The Dow is, or the value stocks are doing very well. The NASDAQ down 217 right now. Well, I'm going to give you a couple of examples here of stocks that meet our criteria in this environment that has gone topsy-turvy. You have a 180-degree shift from what was working 2 months ago to what is working today, even 1 month ago. It's been quite a turbulent rotation out of a sector that led the market, a group of stocks that led the market over the last couple years, to a group of stocks that have lagged the market badly for a long, long time. Okay, so you're not going to get a robo-taxi stock today, or, you know, I never did buy those anyways, but you're not going to get a high-growth software company, autonomous technology that, robotics this, automation that. No, you're going to get, instead, you're going to get the picks and shovel bricks and mortar companies that make up what it takes to build a robot, you know? We'll start with Alcoa. What? Alcoa? Yeah, he used to be in the Dow at one time, not that long ago. Alcoa is now a $6 billion company, which obviously has been all over the place during its history. There's been boom times, there's been bad times, there's been layoffs, there's been hirings. It's a very much a cyclical stock that is very much influenced by the economy, number one, and number two, inflation and the price of the commodity that they mine and they build with, and that is bauxite, aluminum, cast products, rolled products. This is the kind of thing that they do for a living. It's now a small cap stock. It's $6.1 billion. Perfect example. It's up 3% today, hitting a new high. Relative strength, 94. Okay, and I could go to a high growth stock that's more than likely down 3%. I could find any number of those, and the relative strength is collapsing. Relative strength means how is the stock performing against the rest of the market? A 94 on Alcoa means that it's in the top 6% of all performing stocks in the market. Now, I just want to give you one quick ratio out of the Best Stocks Now app, where the Best Stocks Now app right now is crucial. I could not have seen this change coming without it, number one. And number two, when I see a stock hitting new highs like this, I have to look at the forward P.E. ratio, 14.3. OK, Okay, in this kind of environment, I don't think I'd buy anything over really 16 to 18. I wouldn't go much higher than that. So 14 is right in my wheelhouse, 14 times earnings, with a market that's trading at double that, almost. And the growth rate on Alcoa is expected to be 15% per year. So you've got, compare those two. This is an invaluable lesson in an environment like this. Compare the forward PE with the estimated five-year annual growth rate. And when you divide those together, you get a PEG ratio of under 1, 0.95. Now, the third criteria I have to have, or the second criteria I have to have, in addition to a, well, third, I guess, I want a forward PE ratio that's in the teens, the lower teens, if is preferred. I want a growth rate that's greater than or equal to or greater than or very close to that forward PE ratio. I want a PEG ratio that's close to 1. And I want a five-year target price that's 80% or more, has 80% or more upside potential. It currently does. So it meets all of my criteria right now. Does Alcoa AA? I know it's not exciting, but look at the chart. The chart looks like Workhorse did, or like Lordstown did, or like some of these other high-flying, highfalutin, high PE stocks did some time ago. And who cares if, you know, what they do for a living if it's got 80% or more upside potential over the next 5 years? You're just bringing in, you're lowering the valuation risk of your portfolio, and you're shifting over from areas of the market that aren't working to areas of the market that are working. The other half of my equation besides valuation is momentum. And I just read here from an article on Seeking Alpha that the momentum has shifted. The momentum is in the value stocks right now. And I would say small cap value and mid cap value to be more specific. Okay, do I have, yeah, I'm just going to mention one more. Winnebago, WGO. Winnebago has that same kind of characteristic where you've got a forward PE ratio and a growth rate very close to one another. A PEG ratio right around 1, 80% or more upside potential. I think it's going to be a while before people go back to the traditional vacation, and I think there's big, big demand right now. I'm reading it in boats, in RVs, the people that make RVs, the people that sell RVs. We have a little bit of a different world right now. So anyways, those we'll make those the two featured stocks of the day. Well, you know what? If your advisor or your money manager still has you in a big chunk of bond funds that are sinking quickly here as interest rates go up, if you're not in the areas of the market that benefit from a rising interest rate environment, instead you keep beating a dead horse of stuff that worked over the last couple of years, well, I would say that that advisor is not very alert to what's going on in the world and would question whether or not they're managing your portfolio for you. They're charging a management fee. Are they managing it for you? Well, only you can tell that. You'll get your statement here in a couple of weeks. And hopefully, you know, there was some action taken to prevent some severe damage. You know, I was just kind of assessing where I'd be at today had I not done the massive moves that I did in the middle of February would not be pretty. Anyways, if you'd like to get the newsletter, it's a whole different market out there. Boy, what a difference 4 or 6 weeks make. Go to GundersonCapital.com, or you can call one of my advisors, and they'll clue you in on what we're doing right now. 855-611-BEST. Run to the phone. Just kidding. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.